Yeah, bang that gavel.
Welcome to the Manasquan School District Board of Education Combined Committee of the Whole Meeting, a regular public board meeting of Board of Education meeting for October 13th, 2020. Called to order, 48-hour notice. Opening statement pursuant to NJSA 10:4-10. Notice of this meeting has been provided by publication, the Asbury Park Press, the Coast Star, and posted in the Borough Hall of Manasquan and in the schools within the time limits prescribed by law. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, sir.
Mr. Boltman?
Here.
Mrs. Cassone? Mr. Burns? Mr. Patani?
Here.
Mr. Fury? Mr. Hobner?
Here.
Mr. Angolia?
Dennis?
Dennis?
Probably.
Yes, here.
Thank you.
Mr. Lenhart?
Here.
Yes.
Mr. Lucretto?
Yes, here.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Here.
Is now joining.
Welcome, Mark.
Mrs. Pollock?
Here.
Thank you.
Mr. Serena?
Here.
We have four.
Mission, Manasquan Board of, Manasquan School District empowers all students by providing a safe, healthy, and inclusive environment where continual growth, perseverance, and rigorous academic standards are balanced with extracurricular opportunities and rich tradition through partnership with the community. Statement to the public. Oftentimes, it may appear to the members of our audience that the Board of Education takes action with very little comment and in many cases by unanimous vote. Before a matter is placed on the agenda at public meeting, the administration has thoroughly reviewed the matter with the superintendent of schools. If the superintendent of schools is satisfied that the matter is ready to be presented to the Board of Education, it is then placed on the agenda at the next combined committee of the whole and regular board meeting. The members of the board work with the administration and the superintendent of schools to assure that they fully understand the matter. After discussion during the committee of the whole portion of the meeting, the matter is focused on during the regular public board meeting agenda and presented to the Board of Education for a vote. Acceptance of minutes. Recommend acceptance of and approval of the minutes of the combined committee of the whole and regular public meeting and closed executive session of September 15, 2020. Executive session minutes will be withheld from disclosure until such time as a reason for discussing and acting on a matter in closed executive session no longer exists. We have a motion to accept the minutes.
Yes.
Mr. Serino, Mr. Boltman.
Mr. Boltman?
Yes.
Mr. Patani?
Yes.
Mr. Fiore?
Yes.
Mr. Hobner?
Abstain.
Mr. Angolia?
Yes.
Mr. Lenhart?
Yes.
Mr. Lucretto?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serena?
Yes.
Carrie?
We have no student board representative reports, so I'll move us on to our presentations for this evening. We have one, and I'll turn it over to Dr. Cajun.
Yes, we welcome this evening, and I believe he's in attendance this evening. And I want to thank you very much, Stephen, for what you did with our new ticket booths. They look wonderful, and it was definitely needed. Job well done. And if you don't mind, after we show your video, if you wanted to say a few words, I didn't know if you're going to be here in person, and since you're here, you're more than welcome to address the board, so thank you. So we have a video presentation made by Stephen Schmider, focusing on an Eagle Scout project where he created some very nice new ticket booths that were very, very needed. So with that, we'll play the video.
Hello everybody, my name is Steven Schmieder. I am a current senior at Manasquan High School, and I have been a Boy Scout in Manasquan's Troop 59 for almost 8 years now. Just this past spring and into the summer, I was able to complete my Eagle Scout project, which was building three new ticket booths for Manasquan High School to use at football games. I put together this presentation to show everybody how the project went, what went into it, and how the booths turned out. So here are some pictures of the existing booths. There were two of them, and they've quite literally been around for decades. As you can see from the pictures, they're old, they're dirty, they're deteriorating, and they're just in need of an upgrade. So once I got permission from the school to go ahead and build these new booths, I visited the Jager Lumber in Belmar, who graciously donated and then delivered all the lumber to build the three new booths. I built the booths completely from scratch. I took the dimensions of the old booths and built basically replicas of what we had originally, with just a few minor upgrades and changes. So the top left picture is of one of the bases of one of the booths without any walls or anything on top of it yet. And then the right picture is putting together one of the walls. After one day of work, we were able to completely frame out one of the booths, which included making the base, raising the walls, and fitting them together, and then putting a roof on. So this bottom left picture here is a picture of me and one of the other scouts helping out. We were putting the inside trim on the front wall of one of the booths. The picture on the right is it's us trying to move the booths after we kind of put it in a difficult and awkward spot that was kind of in the way of everything. So we had to put a bunch of round sticks down and try and push it while moving the sticks to get it to an easier spot. And then this left top picture is another just update picture of what we had gone through so far. So here's some more pictures. The top left is of our birth site, which was at the Boy Scout cabin, which is located right behind the first gate building in Maxwell. It's in the back of that parking lot. So it was convenient. It was nice and close to the school. So transporting them after they were done was easy. Bottom left picture is one of the adults putting hinges on the front window that opens up and closes for when they're being used in the hinges. And then this right picture is me and my brother. We were putting the inside shelving in one of the booths. So these pictures here outline some of the difficulties that we came across with this project. The left picture was of us building the doors. So this is a little difficult because I had to leave all the wood outside and the elements. I did cover them up with plastic tarps, but moisture still got in and kind of warped the wood a little bit. So we had to straighten it back out by using the trim to kind of pull the warped wood back down to straight. You can see my dad kind of on the left side of the picture looking down to how straight it was. It was myself and Matt, one of the other scouts, were putting pressure to try and flatten it out. The right picture is me putting some nail and screw holes. This just took longer than I expected. I had to go through and putty everything twice and then sand everything back down so it was all flat. These are the pictures of finished booths without any paint on them yet. So this left picture is looking in through the back door into the front. You see you have the two shelves. So you can have like the money box on the bottom one out of sight and deal with people through the front window on the top shelf. And then the latch on the right side of the left picture through the back door latch and juice to pull on. And then the right picture is just of the back door. We use all stainless steel hinges and latches, so nothing would rust and last longer. At this point, all three booths were completely built. So it was time for painting and like the detail work. So the bottom left picture is the roof shingles. I actually got like a bluish roof shingle to kind of match next one colors. The right picture is Ryan painting the inside with gray paint. It's like a light gray paint, so it's not too dark in there. And then top left is the three booths that are done, but they don't have any paint on the outside yet. Here are the three booths painted completely. The left picture is looking in through like the front window where the ticket sales happen. As you can see, the inside is the light gray color, and then outside is the bluish. We had to take the front window hatch off to paint it, so you can just get it just hanging from there. In the middle picture, you can see we painted the framing around the window gray just to break up the blue. And then the back door in the right picture, we painted around all the hinges and taped them all up so the paint didn't get on them and kept the door clean. The left picture here is of all three booths completely done. They have the window hatches back on now, so they were ready to be moved to the school. The right picture is of how we moved them to the school. I contacted Mr. Hudson and asked if the school would be able to, or had the equipment available to bring the booths from the cabin over to the school, which wasn't far, but the booths are heavy and you need some kind of special equipment. So the school did have a tractor, and they had forks on the bucket, so they just laid them down. We put moving blankets down so the paint wouldn't scratch or anything, and one by one they just brought them over. So that was basically the end of what my involvement in the project. I also had special plaques made that detailed that it was my Eagle Scout project, the date, my troop, and then it also thanked the people who donated, whether it was materials, tools, funds, time, whoever really helped out with my project, but without them, it obviously couldn't have been done. And then I fastened them to the top right corners of each booth, so each booth has one of those plaques on them. So finally, I just want to say thank you to everyone who made this project possible. My donors who are outlined on the plaque in the last slide, they are on the left here, thank you. Obviously, without your time and donations, I couldn't have done this myself. And then to the school, Dr. Cajun, Mr. Goodall, thank you for giving me this opportunity and approving me to go along with this project. And to Mr. Hudson for helping me move the booths to this school. And then thank you to the Board of Education for giving me this opportunity to complete the last requirement before I got my Eagle Scout. I think the booths turned out amazing. It was an amazing opportunity for myself. It was a huge learning experience and a good way to demonstrate my leadership roles. So thank you once again and have a good night.
Stephen, really well done. Fun up. One of the best examples of leadership that I could ever think of is humility. And as I watched, and I was so impressed with your civic responsibility and the fact that you had ownership here in Manasquan High School, and you chose us to demonstrate that responsibility, and then you ended it by thanking us. No, Stephen. That was just a show of humility, and it's a great sign of leadership. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank everyone who helped you. Your dad, the Schrappers. I think Michelle was on there, Claire and Nick, Ryan. I mean, it was a cumbersome project to begin with. It must have been really heavy because they're very sturdy. I went over and tried to shake them, and I couldn't move them. So you used great pieces of lumber. And I've looked at those ticket booths for a long time, and I've always said, well, we have to do something about that. And here you come, and you fixed it for us. So thank you for being who you are. It was wonderful. Now the microphone's yours.
Yeah, of course, thank you. Obviously, if you guys didn't let me do this, it wouldn't have been done. Thank you for the opportunity. I think the whole project went pretty smoothly at the plan. And thank you for just like working with me, Mr. Goodall, and giving me this opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Yes, now we'll move to the principal's report, and we'll start with Mrs. Graziano.
Logistics across the building.
with arrival time dismissal, our lunch and cafeteria process. And we've made since last month a couple tweaks, minor tweaks in regards to, you know, a minute here or there that makes a very big difference. And we have a very nice flow with regards to the students arriving in the morning and being dismissed. And we made some changes now that the children are very used to the new procedures that we have in place, the new safety protocols. We made some changes on the recess time on the playground, in which the students now have opportunities. We started a rotation that the children get to go on the different playground units. We rotate them since they could only be used once a day. We sanitized after school. And we've also purchased some playground equipment, very simple playground equipment for the children to use if they are not able to go on one of the units, such as hula hoops or jump ropes that have the handles, they're very easy to clean, easy to sanitize in between lunch periods. So the children are really enjoying recess now. And again, we have some other things we're going to be introducing a little bit at a time, but they're doing a beautiful job every time we make a little change and change things up a little bit to make it a more enjoyable experience for them with all the safety protocols that we have in place. So I have to thank again the teachers on duty, the paraprofessionals on duty, everyone involved with all of those procedures. Our virtual learning program is going very well. We still have 42 students involved in the program. I have to compliment our virtual teachers. They've been working very hard with the students that they have online and the parents. Parents have been wonderful cooperating with our virtual teachers. And now that we're a month in, the younger children are much more comfortable with the programs that we are using and the Microsoft Teams platform. And with that, the teachers are able to introduce more each week with the children, and they're doing a very, very a wonderful job with it. We had a very successful remote learning day in September. We're looking forward to our next remote learning day this Friday. Once again, the teachers are taking it a step further than what they did in September. And each one of the live virtual sessions with the younger children online will be a little bit longer, extended for a little bit longer period of time. So we want to see how they do with that this Friday, but we're thinking very positively and looking forward to the lessons that the teachers have planned for Friday. October, it's a very busy month at the elementary school. We have the Week of Respect in New Jersey and Red Ribbon Week coming up the 23rd to the 31st. But in the elementary school, we took the week and we expanded it into a month of respect at MBS. And so we have ongoing activities in the classrooms at all grade levels, focusing on respect and character education. And they range from, and Mrs. Manello will share some things that are going on in the middle school, but they are the primary grades. We have activities such as door decorating contests that focus on the pillars of character and different themes of each grade level. We have Hearts of Respect, in which the children are doing activities, talking about how they show respect to others and why respect is so important. And the Ribbon Week that's coming up, the teachers, along with our guidance counselors, are preparing activities with the theme this year being Be Happy, Be Brave, and Be Guilt-Free. So again, it's a very busy month, a lot of festive activities going on, and the children really enjoy the activities and have wonderful discussions with their teachers for very important topics. I also wanted to share that we're now a month into our new math program, Ready Math. And we have now also the online component, iReadyMath, underway as well. That's the online diagnostic assessment program that also provides online practice and a differentiated instructional program for the children. We are in the process now of completing our first diagnostic that should be done within another week across the grade levels. And we're looking forward to the data that will provide our teachers so that they can move their instruction forward. But overall, they're very pleased with the program, the actual Ready Math instructional program that they are using with the children, the components, the resources. It's been very well received so far by the teachers, the parents, and the children really seem to be enjoying it. And the last thing I wanted to mention tonight is we are currently in discussion with our staff talking about our Halloween parade. We're very excited that we are going to go forward with our Halloween parade this year. Obviously, we have to make some changes from our normal procedures every year, you know, with new safety protocols in place, but we're excited to provide our children with the opportunity because since March, they've lost a lot of activities. There have been a lot of events and special activities that they haven't been able to experience, so this is one we really wanted them to have. So right now, once again, the parade, since it's outside, they will be wearing their masks, They still will be staying with their class, with their cohort when they're walking. And we have some other measures that we're working on to make it as safe as possible so that our children can enjoy the activity. And that's all that I have for tonight, but thank you very much.
Thanks, Polly.
Thank you.
Now, Mrs. Minetta.
Good evening, everyone. As Ms. Braziano mentioned, it's a busy time for us in October at MES. Our students in grades 5 through 8 have been settling in nicely. We have done some streamlining of some of our routines and procedures as they relate to arrivals, dismissals, lunch, and recess primarily. Little changes here and there to make sure that the traffic flow is really smooth. We're always about eliminating any possibilities for congestion in the hallways. When the students are going in and out for lunch and recess, especially, we streamline that process so that children are essentially moving in a circle throughout the building so that they're not crossing over each other when they're going into those activities. And so that's been really great because it's allowed the children to move in such a way that it's safe, and we've been really enjoying seeing them appreciate the opportunity to, you know, talk to their friends at lunch within their cohort, obviously recess as well. We are going to be looking for opportunities for our 5th through 8th graders to do some additional activities at recess that are going to be safe. So we're talking about soccer balls that they can kick, you know, different things that they can do to keep themselves occupied at recess. So we're looking forward to that moving forward. What's been great as we've gotten past these first 2 weeks is to really focus back in on academics. iReady and ReadyMath are in place in grades 5 and 6. We've completed the diagnostic for all of our 5th and 6th graders. That diagnostic is in the process now. The data is being analyzed. We're going to be meeting with our teachers to provide that data and also to be reviewing all of the materials that are a part of iReady and ReadyMath that support the areas that the students need support in. As the diagnostic reveals. So that's going to be really great for our teachers. And we also have IXL, which is in place for language arts in grades 6 through 8. IXL is also being used for math in grades 7 and 8. And IXL also has a diagnostic piece, which will provide us with a lot of valuable information about our students, especially given the fact that they weren't physically in school at the end of the school year. We want to make sure that our curriculum is meeting their needs right from the get-go. So all of that diagnostic information will be used in our upcoming PLC meetings and our vertical articulation meetings and all of our work and conversations with our teachers about planning their curriculum and instruction moving forward. The month of respect is going beautifully at MES. We, in the middle school, have been taking some daily activities for the kids and turning them into daily challenges. We have some quotes that are inspiring every day that our students are reading in the morning announcements. And we are also doing some spirit days to try to rally around certain topics. So this past Friday was being respectful is no sweat. And we encourage the children to wear sweatpants, sweatshirts to show that it was fun. And this Friday they will be wearing, even though they'll be on their virtual day, their Man Squad pride, showing their pride for their school community. So we'll be looking forward to that. One of the things that we're doing is also trying to emphasize, you know, philanthropic opportunities to our students. So we are also doing a loose change drive. We're calling it, you know, small changes add up, thinking about the ways that they can support others in their community as well. And then we will make a donation at the end for all those small changes that the children are able to collect. One exciting thing that's happened is that we were able to begin athletics at MES, so that was very exciting for many of our students and their families. So we have up and running field hockey, girls and boys soccer, we have cross country going on, and so the students are thrilled to be back with their teammates. Practices are going well, meets are happening and are going well, so we've been really pleased to offer that opportunity to our students. We mentioned the Halloween parade. Colleen and I are working very closely together to make sure that protocols and procedures are going to be in place to stagger the students, to make sure that distance is maintained, to make sure that all the safety measures that we need to take are in place so that we can allow that important tradition to take place. And the last thing I wanted to mention to you this evening is that sort of on the horizon, we're always trying to think about ways to make a little bit of normalcy come into this experience in the safest way possible. So I started the process of planning for the safe and efficient movement of our middle school students from class to class. Currently, they're staying in the classroom and the teachers are rotating to them. That is working very well. However, one of the hallmarks of middle school is that you start to move class to class. We are only going to do that in a cohorted fashion, so the children will continue to move with their cohort, but we will make sure that they're moving to rooms where there are enough desks for everyone in their class that they can maintain a 6-foot distance. We will be staggering transition time so that we're avoiding that congestion in the hallway. That is all in the planning process, but is something that we would like to move towards coming up. So just wanted to put that on everyone.
And we're looking at that. I think it's an excellent idea for the end of the marking period.
Yeah, so the end of the marking period is our goal right now to make sure that, you know, we have some time to make sure we work through all of those processes before we put that into place.
And that's November 10th? November 4th, missed it by 6 days. November 4th, so one of the things that we'll do, we'll keep assessing. Tonight I'll talk about all the COVID cases that we've had in the district. I think we're doing a wonderful job keeping our children safe and secure. But as we, this first semester, we opened up the athletics, which gave them something to come back to normalcy again. And now we'll look, if everything stays consistent as of tonight, as we move forward, then we'll open up the movement for the children to move between classes, which is a very normal experience for them in the elementary school, if everything stays the way it is now. So I think it's an excellent idea. And then we'll gradually move from there as we move, trying to get everything back the way we want it to be.
Small changes as safely as possible, that's always our goal.
That's a great idea. I like it. Great.
That's all for me tonight. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Meg. Mr. Goodall, how are things in the high school?
Fantastic.
Awesome. That's good to hear.
So I just wanted to take an opportunity tonight to kind of recap and update the board on some of the initiatives that we introduced last year as part of improving opportunities for all of our kids here at the high school. One of the things that, you know, I've learned over the years as a principal is to focus on kids who may not be going to college, non-college bound kids, and make them, as best you can, prepared for the job market and to be job ready. So we took a look at what we were doing in many of our industrial arts areas, and we kind of reconfigured the whole program, and we spoke about this last year. And we introduced three new courses, the materials and methods, 1 and 2, which focuses on basic components of the trades, doing some plumbing, some basic electric, metal work, and Mr. Graff does an excellent job introducing the students to that field. And then we also introduced a construction technology course, which enhances that experience in those areas, but also trying to partner with an internship with a local construction company in the area. We haven't been able to do the internship yet, obviously because of the COVID restrictions, but we're looking to get something for those students in the spring. And hopefully that will open up and allow them those opportunities. But most important, we're trying to lead them to a pathway where they take advantages of the apprenticeships through our local unions. And it's been very helpful being in the building with all of the construction, talking to the guys from Thermal Piping and other companies about their experiences and how they got into the field. And so they've given me a lot of information, and it always talks about the same story where they didn't do quite well in high school. Their parents wanted them to go to college, but they knew that they had a different pathway to take, so they went into the apprenticeships programs. So we're trying to continue to support that and lead our kids who are not college bound to go that way. In addition, when I arrived here at Manasquan High School, it's been my experience that in preparing kids for 21st century jobs and also to be competitive with the other surrounding school districts and trying to get into the best colleges and universities, you have to have a rigorous science program, math program, and STEM program. And we added, which I had spoken to the board about, the importance of adding AP Physics to our course of study. And you can see the enrollment just on doing a little selling within the school. And I appreciate Mr. Frieda and Dr. Buckley assisting me with that. We have 2 sections of AP Physics that are, you know, that's that's a full class for two sections. We have a full section of honors physics, and we have an advanced lab physics, and we also have basic physics, in which the kids who are looking to do the third year science have opted, instead of maybe taking environmental, are taking physics. So I really applaud them taking the more rigorous classes. What are we looking to do in the future? Well, going back to what I said about rigorous math and science programs, I'm looking to establish a STEM academy here at the high school. That would mean partnering. I know we have some partnerships that Ms. Edwards has with some of our engineering courses, but to make it more comprehensive, I would like to partner with a organization called Project Lead the Way. And Project Lead the Way offers, you know, high rigorous curriculum in the areas of engineering and also biomedical sciences for our students. So by putting that all together with the rigorous classes and the electives offered by Project Lead the Way, we will be able to establish a substantial STEM program here. You do it incrementally. They don't allow you to just do it all at once. It requires a lot of investment in professional development. It's a week-long program in the summer where the teacher agrees to go to professional development. But I believe that this will be very, very important to bring to this high school, so the kids get a real firm grasp of development in STEM education as they look to move on past Massquan High School. We're also going to be looking, I know Dr. Cajun talked to me about certifying some of our academy programs. I guess at one point we used NAFTRAC to do that. And it seems we distanced ourselves from that organization. It's not the proper return on investment for the money we were spending, but we'll be looking to see if any other organization will certify our academies. And finally, as part of the equity committee, Dr. Cajun challenged me to find a program that is a direct impact on the student body in making them aware of our social differences and ways that we can be more accepting of each other. In previous districts that I've been involved with, we had a program called Challenge Day that we're exploring, Mrs. Kenny and I, to bring to our high school. And they, you can see the primary social and emotional competencies that they address at Challenge Day are social awareness, relationship skills, self-awareness, self-management, and responsible decision-making. It's usually a three-day program. They deal with about 100 to 150 kids per session. And it's been my experience, it's a valuable experience in bringing your school together and making sure they're aware of all of the differences, no matter what your makeup of your population is. So we're exploring that. They're doing most of it virtual now, but the on-campus experience is incredible. And I'll report later out on where we're at with that. The instructional update at the high school, we currently have 461 students who are on our blue, and then 434 on our gray schedule. We did have a slight increase in students who went completely virtual from 90 to 101. Midpoint review in the first marking period indicates that the teachers are pretty much on the same pace that they were last year, and they're crediting all of the professional development that the district offered with learning sciences and the work that Lisa Kukuda does as the technology coach, and expanded use of live streaming and use of their office hours. So, they're on pace to cover the same level of content that they typically do, which was great to hear. And then, typically each year, ninth graders, that's why we run freshman orientation programs, have difficulty transitioning to high schools. We have a unique situation here with ascending districts, and as well as students from our own elementary school, sometimes they struggle with the increased rigor. And I credit Mr. Reed and the counselors for developing the survey, the ninth graders, and they got a lot of information on what they need to help support them. But typical ones were, you know, more use of having to learn how to use Canvas, and then also the importance of having access to clubs and activities. So, on the last page of the presentation here, tonight we're recommending approval for these clubs to run virtually for students to help support them outside of the classroom. And Dr. Cajun charged me with determining, you know, what their interest is and how, what rationale the teachers would use to how they could run them virtually. And that's it.
Any questions at all? Each club, I think sustainability is important, and so that's why I asked Mr. Goodall to come back to us with numbers. I wanted to see how many numbers were in each individual club that he was recommending to us, and if they are sustainable. Yeah, Joe.
Thanks, Mr. Goodall, because I actually was going to ask about, we talked about sports and how great it is on both sides of the street for the kids to be a part of something, some normalcy. And I was going to actually ask about clubs. You know, for those kids that aren't involved in a fall sport, you know, I think of our freshmen, but really all the students, just being involved and having that opportunity. So that's fantastic that we're reviewing that. Is there any way to allow them to be live, or do you think that that is something that is too difficult and not safe at this point? Just for, you know, especially in the high school, it's great that we're going to be back in about a week or so, but every other day, just, you know, being, I'll just speak, my son is doing freshman football. He's here every day, loves it. He's excited. He doesn't get in very much, but he absolutely loves it, all right? And it's a great experience for him. So I just think for all the students to have some form, and each of our principals have mentioned the word, and I love it, you know, some form of normalcy would be great.
We've made for an allowance to, on a case-by-case basis, if the advisor feels they need to do something on campus, they would appeal to me, I would talk to Dr. Cajun, we would give the go-ahead.
Awesome.
And if they could do it virtually, that's even better, but we certainly recognize that some on-campus things would must be more preferable for them. And then on top of that, we got some really good news today that winter sports look like to be rolling on too. So we're getting there in steps, but it's just gonna take some time.
No, and please know, we appreciate, you know, everything you guys are doing. You're going above and beyond to try and give the students the best overall experience, not just academically, but even from a social aspect, like I said, creating that normalcy, and it's just so appreciated. So thank you to each of you, and your administrator, you know, everyone, teachers, please. I know it's a team effort, so thank you.
Any other questions, guys? Good, thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob.
That ends the presentations for this evening.
Yep. That brings us to our first public forum on agenda items. Time may be allotted for the public comment at this meeting. Each speaker may be allotted a limited time when recognized by the presiding officer. In the event it appears that the public comment portion of this meeting may exceed 45 minutes, the presiding officer may limit each statement made by a participant to 3 to 5 minutes duration. Individuals wishing to address the board shall be recognized by the presiding officer and shall give their names, addresses, and the group, if any, they represent. Although the board encourages public participation, it reserves the right through its presiding officer to terminate remarks to and or by any individual not keeping with the conduct of a proper and efficient meeting. During the public participation portion of this meeting, the board will not respond to questions from the public involving employment, appointment, termination of employment, negotiations, terms and conditions of employment, evaluation of performance of promotion or disciplining of any specific or prospective or current employee. This public forum is limited to comment on items included in this agenda only. Would anyone like to be heard? Seeing no one, We will move to our second public forum for public comment on any items on this agenda or not on the agenda. Would anyone like to be heard? Seeing no one, we'll move on to our discussion items, and I'll turn it back over to Dr. Cajun.
Thank you. We're going to move into the committee of a whole as we speak, and I'd like to start with a COVID update. And just to answer some of the questions for this evening, I really think that personally, I want to be very cautious as we move forward. I think we've been doing well, but I think small moves at this time are most beneficial for us. Listening to all the medical professionals out there, all I keep hearing about is October and November being that flu season are going to be very important months for us to take a look at the upswing of cases. So I'm very cautious about as we're moving forward with that. Having said that, we do want to do the most that we can to open things up so we can have that normal educational experience for our children. To that point, at the high school, we've had five students sent home for COVID symptoms. We've had three positive cases to date. We had a number of students' parents notify us that they were keeping their students home because they were ill and wanted to get them tested to be safe and or come in close contact with COVID positive persons or family members. There were 30 of those. We had one athletic team totaling 23 that had contact with a COVID positive student, and a majority of those tests, I don't have them all back yet, are being sent back to us, and they're all negative as of this time. I believe I'm correct, Mr. Chair. At the elementary school, total students sent home with suspected COVID symptoms since September 9th have been 16. From those students, total students quarantined for travel purposes, 2. Total students positive for COVID-19 out of those 18 students is 1. Total students kept home by parents of concern as their child or children presented with cold symptoms, 6. So after everything is said and done, we had 3 cases in the high school and 1 in the elementary school. And again, I believe that's attributed to the care that parents are taking with their children, to seeing symptoms and keeping them home if they feel that they're sick, taking them and testing right away. My administrators and staff being very cognizant of what symptoms are, and my nurses being very diligent for what they're doing in the building. So I think that speaks well for the fact that we're, like some schools, we're every day in the elementary school, full sessions, and we're every other day, full session, including lunches in the high school. And with that, we only have 4 total cases. So I think we're doing well, and that makes me as cautious as I am right now. So, also, something that was mentioned was athletics. The winter season, all winter sports have been given.
Donna Bethune.
Hi, Donna.
Is now joining.
Hi, I'm sorry I'm late. I was on a first aid call. I'm so sorry.
We're very happy to have you here. We're starting December 3rd, practice starts for all winter sports. Games will start the regular season December 21st. It will end February 3rd. Postseason will be from February 5th to February 17th. Volleyball and gymnastics will be involved in what they call a skinny season. I'll leave that there. There will be 15 games that will be permitted in each season and 1 scrimmage. The state was very convoluted about when it focused on spectators, but when it gets down to, I believe that the state does not want spectators at any activity, any of the winter sports. Do you have that pulled up, Pete?
I do.
And as I usually do, when I think something's convoluted, I'll either look to Jesse or Pete to handle it for me. So in this particular instance, Pete's going to read exactly what the NJSIAA said about spectators.
I'll read exactly what they
Dr.
said.
Dr. Crowley.
And then I'll give our interpretive statement. What they said is, under the executive order, the number of people permitted at a practice or competition will be limited to 25% of the capacity of the room in which the event takes place, with such limit not to exceed 25 persons or be less than 10 persons. However, if the number of individuals who are necessary for the practice or competition, such as players, coaches, and referees, is greater than 25 persons, The practice or competition may proceed as long as no individuals are present who are not necessary for the event. If this exception applies, the number of individuals at the event still may not exceed 25% of the capacity of the room or 150 persons, whichever is less. So basically how that reads is you can have, if your event exceeds, you can have up to 25 fans so long as you have less than 25 people participating in the event. That's unrealistic in any of our events. You have players and referees that exceed 25. So as long as you're over 25 with the participants, then you can't have any fans there, which is where most of our events will fall.
However, how I'm viewing that is, in my mind, the essential people in an event is the pep band, cheerleaders, and teams. So for home basketball games, my expectation, and correct me if you think I'm wrong with this, Peter, or not, would be I want to have the cheerleaders there, the pep band there, for the players. We have all the stands out and have them sitting in the stands for our home games. And also, if the wrestling team would like to have cheerleaders at the wrestling matches or the pep band, they can have that as well. So any questions about that? I know winter sports is something that everybody's been on everybody's mind, and the rules came out today.
What was the last line about the 150 people? Where did I miss something?
That's the total maximum. So in what Dr. Cajun just described, if our pep band was 100 people, they might not be able to come. But given the numbers on our teams, the cheerleading, the two basketball teams that are playing each other, and the pep band would all fall under 150.
So the 150 doesn't allow for spectators?
No, 150, it's 150 participants, but that's the absolute maximum, even if it's participants can't go over 150.
So what they're saying is they don't want any spectators at the game, which I think they should at least have allowed parents in to watch their children play. Yeah?
Are we going to make a combination of live streaming some of these events for parents?
It is my intent, and I'll leave it there. Or else, Jesse, are we going to live stream everything?
Absolutely.
Definitely, we're going to live stream everything.
That's what I like to hear.
Now, with other events, though, like wrestling, and we also will have swimming if we can find a pool, it's very difficult right now because the Atlantic Club has shut down, and they won't let anyone come in to use their facility, anyone meeting a team from a high school, correct?
Yeah, Atlantic Club's not accepting anybody, and some of Neptune we've reached out to also is not accepting outside groups, so we're working on, Mr. Cahill is working on straightening out where we can swim, but right now it's not going to be where we were last.
And that's not just for us, that's for Wall and anybody who uses the Atlantic Club. So I don't know where these teams are going to find places to swim, but we're going to do our due diligence and try to find a pool. But we will live stream everything that we can, Terry. Any other questions about athletics or COVID response? Our protocols are working. Okay, that's what it tells us. Okay. Also, during the last meeting, as we moved to policy, the board asked us, Pete and I, and Pete did his due diligence, to focus on other schools and what they were doing regarding siblings and tuition. And Pete reached out to quite a few schools, and he's got an update for the board. Now, I understand tonight, I'd like you to let me know if at the next board meeting you want to focus on creating a policy to this regard, and then we will present you with a policy at the next meeting to read, focusing on allowing for a tuition reduction for siblings or not. But just let us know tonight after Pete gives you the data.
Sure. So you guys should already be in the board, at least should already be in receipt of this data. I sent it out with a Friday packet 2 weeks ago. I emailed out our county organization of business administrators to ask them a couple questions. Namely, what is the rate they're charged for their tuition at different grade levels, and whether or not they offer discounts for families with siblings. That was kind of the basis of our discussion at our last meeting. If you reviewed the data, you'll see probably the same conclusion I'm about to draw, which is it's kind of all over the place. All different schools do different things. Our tuition rates are higher than some, lower than others, depending on the district. Some schools offer half price rates for siblings. Shore Regional offers half price rates for siblings, but their tuition is $9,500, so they're higher tuition than us, but they do have that discount. We currently do not offer any. Spring Lake Borough does not offer any sibling discounts. Their tuition is slightly lower in the K to 8 range, but higher in the pre-K range. Little Silver has higher tuition than us in pre-K, higher in kindergarten through 8, and do not offer any breaks to siblings. Avon is just reading you a couple of them that jump off. Avon offers a lower rate, and they do offer family members a discounted rate. So, it all just depends where these schools are at and what they're trying to accomplish with the tuition. Obviously, some are trying to just increase enrollment regardless of revenue. Others are trying to drive up their revenue and selling a great product. There's a couple different ways to approach it. So, that's the data. Well, you know, obviously, the policy decision is up to you guys whether or not you want to extend that to sibling discounts. Or
I'd like to make a comment on that. I think it's a good evaluation to look at. I think our tuition rates are very reasonable, specific to both our schools, but specifically the elementary school. I don't think it's a policy or decision we want to make right now. Lowering the rate and the increasing population is probably not the time to do that. My comment.
That's up to you, Ben.
Because one of the reasons we're able to stay open and we're not having a lot of cases is because we can space our students.
I agree with Gene. I think that the reason that we've always talked about tuition paid students is because we had empty seats and because we were looking at statistics saying going forward that we were in these dire circumstances that we were, enrollment was plummeting and we were going to have this big building with nobody in it. And that hasn't seemed to happen. If anything, it's gone the other way. So I wouldn't.
Mom, can you speak up a little? I can't hear you.
He agreed with everything.
I agree with everything Gene said. I was just being a lot longer winded than Gene was. But thank you, Donna. But anyway, we're not in a situation where we need to increase enrollment per se. I mean, maybe in the long term we do, but I think in the short term, now's not the time to be, offering discounts and trying to acquire more students while we're in the current situation, we're in. So I agree with you.
But to that point, focus on the students that are here with siblings. If we're not intending on increasing enrollment, but we want to look at a sense of equity for the students who are here, would the board be open for a discount for siblings anywhere? I mean, there's a 20% discount in one school, 50% discount in another school that are in district now. I think that's the question that was posed to us going back a few weeks ago.
How large population up there?
Pete?
How many siblings do we have?
No, it's very few, I believe. And you know what? I had that information in the last meeting. It's, I believe, 3.
3?
Well, 6 total. 3 families with 2 kids.
I don't understand the genesis of the conversation, so maybe I'm missing something. Are we doing this because we have a specific person requesting to send more of their children here and they can't, and they're looking for a discount? Like, I don't understand why we're having this conversation, to be honest. Did I miss the beginning?
Because a member of the community came to me and asked if we had entertained the idea of having a policy for tuition reduction for siblings. And I said I would bring it to the board level, as I did last month. Then the board asked us to gather data for the discussion, which we did. And now we're bringing it tonight to see if you would like to develop a policy for those people who are in district to focus on giving a discount to anybody who has siblings. So that's what the genesis of the conversation.
Thank you for that, because I missed that part.
Okay. You want us to do further research, or are you guys set?
The impact is minimal. Right, so the impact overall is minimal. It's a goodwill gesture, if anything. Financially, it's not going to hurt us. I'm not against it. If the rest of the board sees fit, I'd go for it.
But are we doing this for existing students, or are we doing this for potential students?
For existing students.
Oh, okay.
But new people come in, they'd have the same. I mean, that would be our
obviously.
That would be according to the policy that you've created. I mean, you could do it for existing students now, and any students that comes in after 2021, then they would have to pay full tuition. You could do this many different ways. That's why I want us to come back with different types of policy structures. We can do that. or if you just want to end the conversation tonight, I'm fine with either way.
We can look at it more. I think the money is minimal, because it's not a money issue. It's a space issue and all. And it'd almost be a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
Based on the grade level, if we decided to do it.
So why don't we create a policy like that? I'll present it to the board in the Friday packet. You can look at it, and if you guys want to change it, it's up to you. So Pete, this Friday, we'll put out a policy. We are focusing on siblings and different structures of tuitions, and from 10% to 50%, see what you come up with, depending. And then at the next meeting, we'll talk about it. Is that good?
Yes.
Okay. Policies for revision, reading agenda, second items. I don't see any listed. Finance, budget plan of action for the 2021-2022 zero-based budget school year. And all my administrators love hearing that. Thank you for your cooperation in that regard.
Thanks, Dr. Cation. On the agenda tonight, we'll be adopting our formal budget plan of action, which kind of dictates dates and some dates more specific than others as to how the budget process is going to take place throughout the year. I'll basically recap what my predecessor, Lynn Coates, put together last year, and I'm sure you guys are very familiar with, because I know it was a topic of discussion, which is to say the implementation of the zero-based budgeting process into this district. Just to clarify what that looks like, it is a budgeting best practice in school districts. It changes the budgeting process from my office or the business office dictating to department heads, principals, you get X amount of dollars next year, just let me know where you're going to put it. It kind of turns it in the other direction to tell me exactly what you need to operate next year, and then that's presented to the budget committee to decide whether or not that will be entered into the formal budget. So everyone starts at zero, hence zero-based. They build their budget from the ground up. And then it's evaluated on its merits from there.
Was this implemented last year?
Yes.
And how to work out, you know, when you did a comparison from the previous year versus saying, okay, here's your number, you know, let me know where the dollars are going to go versus saying, okay, tell me what you need or what you think you need for your particular department. And then, you know, have you done a side-by-side to see where did it pretty much flush out the same way or?
What you mean in just terms of total the
total
number?
Total dollars, because one department might have a greater need and another department might have lesser of a need in a given year, but in the end, the number came out about the same.
Yeah, the departments across the board received a lower allocation, basically. There was dollars cut from every department that would have been there had it just been an allocation-based budget. Allocation-based budgets typically are, what'd you have last year? 2%, here you go. But there are special cases throughout different departments, you know, to your point. For example, we purchased in the athletic department new helmets for the football team. So their net budget would have been up a little bit based on that the unique nature of that big ticket item. Typically, as you might expect in a zero-based budgeting, departments did go lower than what they would have had in an allocation, because when you really take a magnifying glass to your departmental budget, you can find stuff in there.
So that question, Pete really, I don't think he, not being here, longer than just now, you could really focus on that. You only saw last year's budget, this year's budget.
Yeah, the year-to-year comparison is all I have to offer.
The answer is yes. I mean, one of the things, and understand it was a new way of approaching the budget that the administrators hadn't experienced before, and they did their due diligence to ensure that they checked and rechecked, and what they were ordering was something they really needed. And I know in the various departments, in Rick's department, in Rob's department, Colleen, they made cuts. Thing because we were focusing on, and Pete just mentioned one of the things that we needed, new football helmets. So where's that money going to come from? Because they didn't have it allocated. We had to allocate it in the budget, and we had to pull it from places. And they looked at their thing, their budgets, and said we needed this, this, and this. I didn't need that. And they did cut their budgets from the previous year. And that, I think, was a good practice, because that wasn't done by central office. That was done by the individual administrators who have a handle on what's going on in their buildings and in their departments. It is a practice that's new, and we're going to get better at it as we move forward. That was a good question. Thank you.
Long story short, with the finance, this will be year two of that type of budgeting. We're entering the month where I'll start meeting with department heads to go over that process that now they're used to, they've done for a year. And you can go through the budget plan of action to see the time frame for that rolling out. The next thing I was going to discuss was tuition, but we've already discussed that. Are there any questions about finance, the budget, other questions about the zero-based budgeting and the budget plan of action? Anything, Dr. Cajun? I'll go right to buildings and grounds.
Seeing none, just roll right into buildings and grounds.
You got it. It's continued to be busy in the building and grounds department, as you guys are aware of. We're wrapping up the HVAC project. It's in its punch list phase. We received just before this meeting, actually, a four-page punch list from New Road Construction detailing a number of items. I'll share that out in the Friday packet this week so you guys can see what that looks like. But as you guys know, as we've reported out before, it's been really successful. I think everyone's pretty happy with the HVAC upgrades in the building and the quality of the air in the building at this time. There is a change order on this agenda, which is kind of a catch-all change order for some different things that took place throughout the project. It's been going back and forth between the architects and the construction manager as to whether it could be an allowance draw or not, but that's kind of the wrap-up change order for the project. Now it's just really punch list stuff and finishing things up. Our control guys are in the building every day, second shift, and our fire alarm guys are in the building every day, second shift, and that'll continue for another 4 or 5 weeks, mid-November. That should completely wrap up. So that's where we're at with the HVAC project. The gym floor, effective this Friday, actually, is now can be used without restriction. It needed 30 days to cure. It's now fully cured. If you haven't been in there yet, it's beautiful, and the gym classes they're trying to stay outside as much as possible, so it hasn't gotten many feet on it yet, but they're now welcome to start doing activities inside. And of course, as Dr. Cajun mentioned, our basketball team will be playing on it this winter. That's what I have, Dr. Cajun, for buildings and grounds. Any questions about that? Any of those projects?
When are the bleachers still there?
The bleachers are going to be delivered the first day of teachers' convention, or of that virtual week, I should say, the second. They'll be delivered on the second that Monday. They'll be installed the duration of that week and the following week. We have no kids in that first week. The following week, kids will be displaced from the gym. They won't be able to use the gym that week. At the end of that, the project will be completely over. The gym floors and bleachers will be fully installed, and we'll be ready to go for the basketball season and wrestling season.
Seeing no other questions, that completes the committee of the whole. Then I move right into my superintendent's report. Thank you. Regarding enrollment, our total enrollment is 1,541 students. In the high school, we have 1,009 students. In the elementary school, 532. I think it's commendable to see that we have 1,009 students in the high school. And I know that Mrs. Kenny, Mr. Goodall, did a great job going out and letting people know the value of an education here at Manasquan, and it shows. Since I've been here, that's the highest number of students that we have in high school. My goal was to get 1,000, and we have 1,009, so job well done. Regarding our bus evacuations, October 12th and 13th, for routes 9500, 9501, 7518, 7520, 7521, 7523, 7524, and PQS 7525, and Brielle, we did our bus evacuations. When I say we, it was Mr. Goodall and Mr. Reed who did the bus evacuations early that morning, and I thank them for that. The high school, we did have our drills in September 16th and 17th, got a lockdown drill, September 18th and 21st, our fire drill. The alternative school, September 16th and 17th, we had a lockdown drill, and September 18th, we had a fire drill. Elementary school, September 21st, our fire drill, and September 29th, a lockdown drill. We met the requirements that the state statute sets by having safety, security, and fire drills in the school for the month. Harassment, intimidation, and bullying. In the high school, we had one incident. Was decided it was not harassment, intimidation, and bullying. In the elementary school, we had no reports for the month. We got a letter from the county, and our county superintendent reminded us that we had to focus on graduation pathways and report to the board on our graduation pathways. And I thank Mr. Kenny for giving me the information to report tonight. Our total number of students that graduated, 206. Total number of students who met the graduation assessment requirements by either passing a substantive competency test, portfolio appeal process, meeting alternate requirements specific in their IEPs. Total number of 12th grade students who were denied graduation were 3. 206 met all the requirements. Those requirements were either by passing the NJSLA or PARC as a 10th grader, or by meeting the designated cut score on an alternative assessment such as other high school level NJSLA or PARC assessments, the SAT, ACT, or ACCUPLACER. Those students who use that avenue to complete their high school requirements, we had one, the alternative requirement meeting, and none from the portfolio appeals process. So 2205 had the passing a substitute competency test. Are there any questions about that?
I have a question. The alternative school.
Yes.
How are those numbers reported? How does that work?
I think what you're asking me is, how do students graduate from the alternative school?
Yeah,
they have to meet their Carnegie units, and they have to make sure that they demonstrate a proficiency in the curriculum. Mrs. Kenny, I believe we have 10 students out there as we speak.
We do. Two of the three that were non-graduates from last year are finishing up coursework in there now, and the alternative schools have allowed them the opportunity to do credit recovery, so at a faster pace. So they are on schedule to graduate as of.
Can't hear a word she's saying.
I'll ask her to speak up for you, Donna. Lizzie, will you please speak up?
Sorry.
No, I just think the microphone's not working. I can't.
No, it's working. She's pretty far away, Donna.
Jesse, you want to grab the mic and pull it over?
It's got to be Lizzie.
I'll just scream. I'll use my mom voice.
Alrighty then.
So basically, there are two students in there right now who are continuing their credit recovery, and they will be able to graduate as of December. From last year, we had four students who graduated throughout the course of the year. So they are making up the credits actively as they complete the courses. So we're happy to report that the students, in the last 2 years, I think we've graduated 6 or 7 extra students that we would not have if we did not have that program.
That's exactly what I'm at. Yeah. That's what I was.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's why I sent it over there.
No, because that's kind of...
Yeah.
Why we did it, so I wanted to see how it was doing.
No, it's doing well. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kent.
Any questions? I'm now going to turn over to the report from our assistant superintendent.
Just an update on the some school security items. So I spoke to the board a few months ago regarding Alyssa's law compliance. This was a law that went into effect a couple years ago that requires schools to have a silent panic alarm, right, that's installed in each of their school buildings. We were able to accomplish this adapting our existing phone system at a pretty minimal cost. So now what we have in several locations, at least one in each building, is effectively, it's like a speed dial button that you press on the phone, or the security guard, whoever, can press on the phone. It silently sends a pre-recorded message to the Manasquan Police Department to alert them that there's a emergency situation at the school and has them done. So the state required us to be in compliance for that. In August, we submitted the paperwork, and they approved our compliance, so we are now Alyssa's Law compliant. That's opened another opportunity for us by being Alyssa's Law compliant. Part of this law that went into effect was a pretty substantial bond initiative the state had. I think it was like $500 million that was approved to upgrade school security. So that's where we're at right now. Our allocation to the district is roughly $90,000 that we have access to. So our plan is to apply for that grant. It would be roughly $65,000 to complete the access control project at the high school, and then use the rest of that money, about $25,000, to upgrade our security cameras, many of which are exceeding 10 years old at this point. So those have been developed with Dr. Cajun and our school security coordinator, Mr. Clayton. So that's the plan in the immediate future. So that'll be coming to fruition in the next few months.
Thanks, Jeff. Anything else?
That's all tonight.
Now I'd like to hear from our Director of Curriculum and Instruction.
Thank you, Dr. Cajun.
You're very welcome.
Just a couple points just as it relates to instruction, professional development, and program. Just wanted to reiterate what Mr. Goodall had talked about at the high school. Obviously, we had the transition to an all-virtual learning environment, and one of the things that we talked about at the high school before we moved to that model was where we were in the curriculum across all subject areas, and in getting feedback, we were all very, very happy with what teachers were saying to us in terms of the amount of material covered,
how they were assessing students in the hybrid model. So that was something that was very encouraging to us. As we followed up with teachers, as they are teaching virtually now, it's actually kind of an interesting progression. A lot of teachers now have even moved farther along in the way of technology, where some teachers in the spring were strictly on the Canvas model. One teacher in the English department, Harry Harvey, who I talked to, he said, I'm actually using Microsoft Teams right now because there's more flexibility that I have with meeting with all my students and providing live instruction. So we're seeing that professional development that occurred in the spring and in the summer through Ms. Kokoda and through Learning Sciences. We're seeing that pay off. And we were proactive in the way that we approached this, and I think that set us up in a good way. One of the other points that is interesting as we moved into this all virtual model is this is the first opportunity our teachers at the high school have had to have all the students together at the same time. And one of the few positives that's come out of this situation is it's allowed them, kids to meet for the first time, students to talk about what they're learning, and teachers are actually moving at a nice pace right now in having everyone together. So we're encouraged by that. In a general sense, again, they're where they need to be in terms of curriculum. They feel like they're assessing students in a positive way. As administrators, we've all been in classrooms doing our observations. There's a lot of good interaction there. And so I think we all feel that we're in a good place in not a perfect world. As it relates to the elementary school, as Ms. Graziano and Mrs. Mineta talked about, we're right at the beginning of those windows, those diagnostic windows with IXL and iReady. Teachers have been very open to using those diagnostics. Again, I think going back and some of the PD that was set up over the summer, we were able through a lot of Ms. Graziano's work with teachers, we were able to make a lot of those resources for ReadyMath available to our teachers so they could kind of get familiar with it over the summer. So as we learn more through these diagnostics that we give, these teachers are going to understand what they need to do in terms of moving forward with assigning specific assignments and resources to those students that have specific needs. So our teachers are really to be commended for their work in this area. Moving forward in terms of programs, Mr. Goodall talked about the success that we're having with industrial arts and where we are with our science program, particularly physics. I've had a couple of requests with people, teachers wanting to talk about new course proposals that Ms. Kenny and Mr. Goodall and I will talk about moving forward. One is our thriving dance program, where our teacher, Ms. Galano, was talking about another section, another offering we can have in that area, which is exciting. Our new TV teacher is very enthusiastic. I have a meeting with him this week with Mr. Bramley to talk about some ideas in terms of the curriculum and, again, program development in that way. And we've talked about, and this is something that, I'd like to explore with Ms. Mineta moving forward. We talked about possibly taking a visit to one of the local schools in Monmouth County that has a course for eighth graders that deals with focuses on equity and inclusion and a lot of different topics that we're talking about in our classes right now, but it might be a course that we could infuse into the curriculum at the elementary school. And finally, just in terms of staying with the school environment topic, we are still using Safe Schools. Safe Schools, again, is a training that we use for professional development for our staff, our teaching staff. There are Safe Schools offerings, and these are online training modules. There are these modules and trainings that are available to students. Last year, we implemented them at the high school. Certain videos that dealt with harassment and bullying, dealt with drug and alcohol, the dangers of drugs and alcohol. So we're doing that again at the high school. We're making those available to students through health classes. We're also making them available to eighth graders. We're in the process of selecting those modules now through the counseling department at the elementary school. So that's another thing that we're infusing to make sure that we have a safe and inclusive learning environment for all our students. So that's where we are. Thank you.
OK.
to that point, I just want to thank you, Rick, for taking the lead on learning sciences. And I want to thank all of my administrators here tonight. Rob, Megan, Colleen, Jesse, Leslie. In the summer, I raised the level of anxiety with my administrative team because I knew my staff would be anxious. They needed to be encouraged, and they needed to be encouraged compassionately. I needed people to identify what their needs were, then to assess what we were doing to meet their needs. And you did that. We are where we are today, and believe me, it's just not all compliments that we get from the community. I hear negatives, phone calls and emails, a few, and when I get those, I turn those over to our administrative team, and we take care of those the best we can. We talk to the parents, we find out where we're falling short, and we try to do better. And we've done that on a daily basis, and it has not been easy. And in front of the Board of Education, I want to thank you for your due diligence and what you've done so we can have elementary school students on a daily basis with only one COVID case, that we can have high schools the blue and gray schedule, and we have a schedule that works, and we have a virtual world that has been thrown upon us again by Department of Health that you're meeting successfully. So thank you for that. I didn't want that to go unnoticed. I appreciate what you're doing, and it's because of us working together as a team. And not that there aren't times when you drive me crazy, because you do, and that's just life. But all in all said, you're doing a wonderful job, and even Mr. Place with his technology. He's going to have all our computers up and running, going to have the new ones for the board, which was not an easy task, by next month. It's working. So thank you. I truly appreciate it. And Pete, you're okay too. Now, our report from our Director of School Counseling Services, Mrs. Kennedy.
Okay, so tomorrow we were supposed to have scheduled our PSAT test. We had made a decision that we were just going to test the 11th graders to make sure we were able to socially distance. Obviously, that test has been canceled. However, I have been on the phone with College Board, and we are aiming to reschedule it. Luckily, College Board has added several new dates. And so the June 26th date is the next date that we have available for students to take the PSAT. Most of the schools in our area are either not giving a test, they are giving it to a certain amount of students only, or they are holding out for the January date. So College Board is well aware of this and the amount of students that we do need to test in January, especially the juniors through the junior class are the ones that qualify for national merit. This Thursday, we have a financial aid night, a virtual financial aid night. Every year we have financial aid night, usually in person. We have, it's called College Funding Associates. Mr. Drawbaugh does a nice job with this, and it's virtual. So I encourage all parents to log in and to join the meeting. He does have a lot of updated information about FAFSA and information regarding COVID protocols and financial aid for scholarships moving forward through this time. We also are planning on doing our annual 8th grade open house. If all goes well, we do anticipate having this on November 18th to all of the sending districts. I have sent out information for each of these, a flyer to each of the schools, and it's posted in our elementary schools as well. And so students, we are asking for a registration just so we have an idea of how many students are attending, but we do plan on doing that two sessions to get all of the students to come in, tour the building, and really kind of do a program like we have done in the past. Additionally, college visits have been going very, very well. This was the first year that we transitioned away from Naviance and through SCORE, and I'm very happy to report the students that I've been talking to have been using the app for SCORE and the platform much, much more. The usage report is at least double at this point for the students that are actually actively engaging in this platform. So that's what we wanted to see. We wanted students to have more access to college planning websites, and Naviance was just not as user-friendly. As of today, we have 28 students
who had submitted 115 applications for 64 different schools. So that's, you know, a tremendous amount of applications that are already going out. And because all of the college representatives are doing virtual visits, it's been very unique and exciting for us because we've gotten probably triple the amount. If you remember, up until 2 years ago, we didn't have college visits at all here in Manasquan. Now at this point, from now until November, we have about 62 visits already scheduled. Schools such as Auburn, Catholic University, Fairleigh Dickinson, Loyola, they've already visited. And upcoming schools such as Seton Hall, George Mason, Vanderbilt, Syracuse, we have schools that are coming each day virtually. If students miss the visit, they're all scheduled for 3 to 3:30 or 3:30 to 4 every day. And if students do miss the visit, we have access to all of the representatives and their email. So, you know, I say to students all the time, if you miss the visit, you still want to get that information from that representative. They're more than happy to use that. They're much more accessible now than they have been in the past. So those visits are going extremely well. And the number of students that are signing up in advance, there's been a big increase from previous years. So I think that's it.
Thank you. Any questions at all?
So there's no college night or anything?
As of now, there's no in-person college night simply because we don't have representatives coming out at all. None of them are doing that. There is talk as part of like the Monmouth County Guidance Directors of doing a virtual big night. Schools such as Monmouth, certain area schools have said that it's been a little difficult because to do a virtual event with 150 schools kind of defeats the purpose of the parents kind of going into at one time where they say if you list it, almost kind of do like we did for our back to school night. Mm-hmm. Show students who are available and then the students can click on the links. We're looking at something like that, but as of now, none of the representatives are permitted to even travel to see us.
Because I've done, just for business, all our trade shows have become virtual.
Yeah.
And some of them work very well.
Yeah, and I think that that's
some work very bad.
I think that's what they're working on now. They're working on, I have to be honest, the virtual visits that the college reps have done are really incredible. They've really all upped it. And the opportunity for students to connect one-on-one with the college reps. And so the only difference is at this point, it's not all in one place on one night. So
right.
They are working on it. Monmouth County Guidance Directors always does one in the spring. And we just had a meeting last week to see if we could potentially put something like that together for all area students in the community.
I just always thought that the college night was good. A student can go in there and talk to 20, 30 different
Absolutely.
Colleges and get a real
Absolutely.
Good idea.
Yeah, and the reps really liked coming to ours. You know, they enjoyed it. It was something that they looked forward to every year. Unfortunately, there are none in person in the area right now.
Right, okay.
I have a question, but I'm not sure if it's for Ms. Kenny or Mr. Popola. In terms of the children that you have, the parents keeping them home because they're concerned of symptoms, which you know we want to encourage people to do, what's the plan if a child has to miss school for 2 weeks but the school is not shut down? Like, do they can't just, certainly I don't think in the elementary school they can't go virtual, so.
What happens if a child is, are you saying quarantined for 2 weeks? So say
yes,
quarantine.
not necessarily a positive COVID test, just,
but
you know, the parents are keeping
close
them
home
contact. Because they had exposure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is the plan at the elementary school, either Carlene or Megan, for a close contact case?
So when a child is a close contact, essentially it's treated as though the child is out sick. So our teachers are loading content into Canvas and the children are able to access those materials. The teachers are reaching out to those children who are out, especially for any extended period of time, whether that's 2 weeks for a quarantine or if a child is, you know, sick for 4 or 5 days, reaching out via email, and they're making sure that the kids are able to keep up that way. So the technology has actually been really helpful in that sense for allowing some continuity. Kids can submit their assignments via Canvas or Microsoft Teams as well.
And so that would be the regular teacher, not the virtual.
Right. They're regular scheduler teachers.
And in the high school?
Same thing at the high school. they essentially go virtual, but within their blue and gray schedule. And we communicate with the teachers that they'll be out for an extended period of time. And the teachers have been great reaching out to kids and providing them the resources they need.
So it's the same as if a child last year was sick and we'd send people to the house, but since we can't send people to the house this year, they just stay with the teacher they have in the classroom, and the teacher in the classroom through Canvas puts the assignments on Canvas and then communicates with that child in regards to the assignments going back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense as long as the numbers stay low. I could see that being really hard on the teachers if you have multiple kids who are jumping in and out, you know, 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there.
Oh, without a doubt.
Now,
I mean, the reality is that right now the teachers are really utilizing that technology every day in the classroom, so they're loading those assignments anyway for the kids that are in person in front of them, and they're also receiving assignments that way. So that's part of the reason too why we're always talking about the continuity of the use of these pieces of technology, so that it's not so much extra work also if a child is out, because they're doing that work anyway. They're loading that work on there.
Yeah, there are only two cases of quarantine in the elementary school. We all educate still students at home, but only 2 points. Yeah, it would become cumbersome if we had 20.
Right.
Any other?
Yeah, for Mrs. Kang. I know in the last few years you've created a lot of momentum with the setting districts and those presentations and freshmen for a day and things like that. Are you seeing that this is, the current situation is not lending itself to that? Are we still able to do that?
So Freshman for a Day is one of the programs that we were probably, you know, most proud of, because we got so much, you know, got so much great feedback. As of now, I think it's not off the table. It's just trying to figure out, you know, in the next couple of months, how we can, you know, safely bring more students into the building, if at all possible, to do that. You know, the freshman counselor and I have been working not only with, you know, collectively, you know, for an open house to bring them here, but all of the visits that we always do to the sending school, we are still planning on doing. We're waiting, you know, a little bit longer now to see how sending districts are operating. So, for example, if they're having in-person meetings with an 8th grade class or 7th grade class, we certainly are going to go out to those meetings as well. Really, we're just kind of following the lead from the sending district. We are putting together a virtual presentation that we can, you know, post, so that, you know, essentially whatever we would be doing at the sending districts, we'll do a video, we'll post that. But it is important that if in certain schools where they're doing in-person nights, that we do attend. So it's going to happen. It's just the timeline is a little different.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you. That's the end of my superintendent's report.
Do we have a motion to accept the superintendent's report? Ms. Follett?
Second. Mr. Haldeman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bassone?
Mrs. Bassone?
Yes.
Mr. Cattani? Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Curie?
Yes.
Mr. Otter?
Yes.
Mr. Ogolia?
Yes.
Mr. Lenhart?
Yes.
Mr. Lucretto?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serena?
Yes.
Carrie?
Brings us to the Manasquan general items. Does anyone need anything to separate out items 15 through 24? Does anyone have any questions for items 15 to 24? We have a motion for items 15 through 24.
Yes.
Mr. Boulderman, Mr. Serena.
Mr. Boulderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bassone?
Yes.
Mr. Cattani?
Yes.
Mr. Hopper?
Yes.
Mr. Lucretto?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serena?
Yes.
Carrie?
Brings us to the Manasquan Sending District's general items. Does anyone need anything separated out? Items 25 through 43. Anyone have any questions on items 25 through 43?
Just a comment that the donations from the Alumni Foundation are greatly appreciated.
Yes. That was for the sign up front.
As well as the furniture.
Correct.
The,
yeah.
The Academy of Finance. Line.
Do we have a motion for items 25 through 43? Mr. Hovener? Mr. Lofredo?
Mr. Alderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bissell?
Yes.
Mr. Catana?
Yes.
Mr. Fiore?
Yes.
Mr. Hodder?
Yes.
Mr. Angolia?
Yes.
Mr. Lenhart?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Carried.
Does anyone have any old business they'd like to discuss? Any new business anyone would like to discuss?
I just have a question.
Okay.
How come the new gym floor has the M instead of the Indian, the Warrior hook?
The reason why the new gym floor has an M instead of a Warrior head was purely a design.
If you look at all our fields now over the last several years, everything has the M on it. The turf field, the new football field.
Thank you.
So that'll bring us to our executive session. Whereas the Senator Byron and their Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6, the Act provides that the Massachusetts Board of Education hold an executive session from which the public is excluded to discuss matters that are confidential or are one of nine subject matters listed in Section B of the Act. Whereas it is recommended by the student superintendent of the Massachusetts Board of Education go into executive session on this date in Manasquan, New Jersey, to discuss matters that are permissible for discussion in executive session, and whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 30 minutes, after which the public meeting of the board shall reconvene and proceed with business. Whereas the board hereby declares that its discussion of the following subjects will be made public at a time when the public's interest in disclosure is greater than any privacy or governmental interest being protected from disclosure. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Massachusetts Board of Education that the board shall go into executive session to discuss the following matters: confidential matters per statute or court order, a student matter, and personnel matters, hiring, leave of absence, and resignation. Items discussed in the executive session will result in board action when the board reconvenes the public session. Do we have a motion to go into executive session?
Yes.
Mr. Serino, Mr. Hovener, all in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bissell?
Yes.
Mr. Burns? Mr. Catani?
Yes.
Mr. Fiore?
Yes.
Mr. Hovener?
Yes.
Mr. Angolia?
Yes.
Mr. Lenhart?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
We have a quorum.
Do we have a motion for item 47, Manasquan personnel? Mrs. Pollock? Mr. Hovener?
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bissell?
Yes.
Mr. Catani?
Yes.
Mr. Hovener?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Carried.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
High school personnel.
Oh, I'm sorry. Check it off. Do we have a motion for item 48, the Manasquan Sending District's personnel? Mr. Ovier?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bassan?
Yes.
Mr. Catani?
Yes.
Mr. Fiore?
Yes.
Mr. Hovater?
Yes.
Mr. Angolia?
Yes.
Mr. Lindhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Carried.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Yes. Yes. Mr. Serino, Mr. Hovater, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thanks, guys.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great week, everyone.
You too.
Nice job.